From claims of healings and visions to the world's most inexplicable events, whether you're a believer or a skeptic, the truth is always worth the hunt.
EWTN Radio presents The Miracle Hunter with Michael O'Neill.
Welcome to The Miracle Hunter Radio Show on EWTN Radio. This is Michael O'Neill. I'm The Miracle Hunter. We've got a big feast day coming up this week, the Feast of the Sacred Heart of Jesus. That's one of the classic devotions that we have in our Catholic faith. And we've got Emily Jaminet, the author of Holy Habits from the Sacred Heart. She's one of the absolute experts on this topic. She'll be joining us today to talk about this new book and talk about how we can bring the Sacred Heart of Jesus into our lives. I'll be excited later in the show to be talking about another beautiful book called Mary, Mother of God, and this is from Rosicon Press. If you don't know Rosicon Press, these are these famous Polish authors who write these incredible coffee table style books with a beautiful photography and discussion of topics, miraculous and otherwise. I have all of their books. I really am a fan of their work. And their latest book is called Mary, Mother of God, where it gets into all the details of all the relics and the history and the tradition and all the beauty that surrounds Mary as the Mother of God. So we'll be excited to be joined by Grzegorz Gorny and Janusz Rosicon, all the way from Poland. So we'll be happy to chat with them about their brand new book. And my latest book, Science and the Miraculous, How the Catholic Church Investigates the Supernatural, it's out from 10 Books and available at EWTNRC.com. It answers the question, is the church anti-science? And Science and the Miraculous looks at the church's rigorous investigation of miraculous occurrences, including Eucharistic miracles. And check out my television series, Explore with the Miracle Hunter, which airs tonight at 6 p.m. Eastern Time, the episode on Paray-le-Monial. That is where we travel to France and look at the life of St. Margaret Mary Alacoque, who experienced dramatic visions of Jesus' Sacred Heart, and we'll be exploring the origins of this cherished devotion. And that'll be tonight at 6 p.m. Eastern Time on EWTN. Later in the show, we're going to be looking at the 365 Days with Mary project. For today, we've got June 10th, Our Lady of Lapa from Cernatale in Portugal. And the might-be saint of the day is Blessed Bogumius of Gniezno from Poland, who lived from 1135 to 1182. And the question of the week is a good one. Does the incorrupt finger of St. Thomas that touched the side of Jesus still exist? I'll do my best to try to answer that question in just a little bit. Let's take a look at the miracle news. We do this every week where we talk about all the miracles happening all around the world and those things that relate to miracles. And I talk about this a lot on my show, and that when it comes to Marian apparitions, the Vatican doesn't really get involved usually. Usually it's the local bishop who does the investigation and comments perhaps on a Marian apparition, and the church in Rome will not do much. They may show some signs of recognition of a case that's been approved, but they very rarely get involved, and it's very rare when the Pope himself gets involved in an apparition that has not been approved. However, something interesting happened this past week. The Pope actually made a statement about a Marian apparition that is being investigated currently, and the headline of the article says, Virgin Mary apparitions are not always real, says the Pope. And he's talking about the Trevignano case. And Pope Francis says the Madonna doesn't draw attention to herself. So this past Sunday, Pope Francis said that apparitions of the Virgin Mary are, quote, not always real, end quote, amid a furor over a supposedly weeping blood statue of the Virgin Mary near Rome. And he said, don't look there, the Pope told the broadcasters, when looking about apparitions of the Virgin Mary. He's saying this is not a real case. That is an instrument of Marian devotion that is not always real. There are images of the Madonna that are real. I think he's saying there are weeping statues of the Madonna that truly weep, but the Madonna has never attracted attention to herself. I like to see with her finger pointing up to Jesus. And of course, that references a different icon style where she is leading the way to Jesus. And when Marian devotion is too centered on itself, it is not good. That's what Pope Francis says. So a Catholic bishop on Thursday advised the faithful not to attend the monthly meetings at the Lake Bracciano hillside town of Trevignano before a statue of the Madonna while it investigates claims by the owner that it weeps blood and that the Virgin Mary makes apparitions there. Civita Castellano Bishop Marco Salvi, he told priests not to comment on the supposed supernatural events of Trevignano, where the statue is set in a glass case. The owner, Gisella Cardia, we've talked about her a little bit on the show in the past, she's the alleged visionary who holds meetings with hundreds of faithful before the statue on the third day of the month. Last month, she said she was undeterred by the probe stemming from a complaint to police in order to demolish the statue's case. She says, "I won't budge an inch because I'm in the house of God and I have the Madonna on my side." And she points out that the apparitions, Cardia says, the assembled crowd with the Virgin telling her usually gives messages of hope. And Cardia, who's 53, moved to Trevignano after receiving a 2-year suspension for bankruptcy when her ceramics firm went bust in 2013. And she's been hosting apparitions events ever since. And she's a businesswoman who, until years ago, went by her birth name, Maria Giuseppe Scarpula, until she bought the statue at a Bosnian apparition shrine at Medjugorje a few years ago. And so that was a report coming from us, from ANSA in Rome. And this is an interesting case, of course, where Pope Francis is making a comment about an ongoing apparition, saying that he doesn't believe it to be a true one. Absolutely fascinating. That doesn't happen all too often. For more miracle news, you can go to the Facebook page of The Miracle Hunter, where I post items each and every day about the miracles happening all around the world. Let's take a look at Catholic Club Trivia. We do this every week where we ask a trivia question and give out a prize to an emailer who writes in with the correct answer. People who know me, my friends, they know that I love trivia. You might find me on a bar on some random night playing pub trivia, but this is Catholic Club Trivia. And so last week's question, a lot of people got this one. We are talking about incorruptibility. We were last week. What third century martyr is thought to be the first incorrupt saint? And it is that patron saint of musicians, Saint Cecilia. I was at her tomb a couple years ago. I guess it was with COVID, everything seems shorter than it really was. But I guess it was 5 years ago. I was at her tomb there in Rome, where they have a beautiful sculpture that represents where her incorrupt body once laid. And she is considered to be the very first incorrupt saint in history. So thanks to everybody who wrote in with that answer. For this week's question, we're talking about with the Rosicon Press authors about their brand new book about Mary. And so the question for today is, name any one of the four canonically crowned images of the Virgin Mary from the United States. Again, name any one of the four canonically crowned images of Mary from the United States. If you think you know that answer and want to win the prize, the image of the faces of Mary, send me an email to miraclehunter@ewtn.com or just go to my website, miraclehunter.com, and click on the contact tab, and answers and winners will be posted on the show page on miraclehunter.com. We need to take a short break, but when we come back, we're going to be talking to Emily Jaminet, author of Holy Habits from the Sacred Heart, ahead of the Sacred Heart Feast Day this week. Stay with us for that.
Now, back to the Miracle Hunter on EWTN. Here's Michael O'Neill.
Welcome back. You're listening to the Miracle Hunter radio show on EWTN Radio. This is Michael O'Neill. I'm the Miracle Hunter. Hey, we've got a big feast day coming up this week, and that is the Feast Day of the Sacred Heart. And it's a big one, and that devotion has caught fire in a big way in recent years. I'd say that for some time it had gone quiet in the sense that the faithful didn't celebrate it in the way that they had in the past. And tonight on EWTN, an episode of Explore with the Miracle Hunter goes to Paray-le-Monial, which is the place of those apparitions of Jesus Christ and the beginning of the Sacred Heart devotion. And so people can tune in tonight at 5 p.m. Central Time, 6 p.m. Eastern, to check out that episode of Explore, where we look at the life of St. Margaret Mary Alacoque and all the incredible visions that proceeded from there. Well, we're so excited today to keep the conversation going about the Sacred Heart. And we've got one of the absolute experts on the Sacred Heart with us today, and that's Emily Jaminet. And she's the author of a brand new book, Holy Habits from the Sacred Heart. And that one is out from Ave Maria Press. Welcome back to the show today, Emily.
Thank you so much, Michael, for having me on. I'm really excited about this new book. I'm excited about what Jesus is doing in the life of the faithful when he is honored, especially through devotion to the Sacred Heart of Jesus.
Wonderful. I know you've written some books in the past about the Sacred Heart, so I'm so glad that you're continuing on this focus, on this theme. And I think whenever anybody writes multiple books on the same topic, we always have to ask the question, why this book? Why is it different than your previous offerings?
What a great question. You know, Secrets of the Sacred Heart laid out to break down the 12 promises, the beautiful promises given from Jesus to St. Margaret Mary 350 years ago. But Holy Habits from the Sacred Heart is what happens, the potential, what happens when we encounter the love of Christ and how our hearts can be set on fire. So it walks you through particular virtues, especially virtues, that Jesus is offering each one of us, these graces and gifts. And as St. Margaret says, treasures from the Sacred Heart that can really change our relationships. So our faith is not just limited to our personal relationship with Jesus, but it's meant to go forth and set other lives ablaze. So that's a big challenge that I have, but I tackled it in Holy Habits from the Sacred Heart.
Wonderful. And the format or the layout is different than your other books, and I think it's nicely laid out, and it's easy to read just to pick up and to flip it open and to just get a nugget of wisdom from these books without diving into long chapters. Talk about the format. How did you end up on this format, and what is this format best used for?
Well, Mike, as a mother of seven, married 25 years, I realized that a lot of us are on the go, and we need spiritual tools, spiritual books to help us in the busy life we live. So each chapter, each 10 chapters, includes a vignette from a heart, a story of someone. A couple times I share my story of what happened when I encountered the love of Christ and how relationships in my life changed, aka my heart changed. But I also lay out some, you know, devotional questions, some teachings, a lot of these actual words in the diary and the writings of St. Margaret Mary, so that you can see with clarity the peace and the love and the joy that Jesus is offering you through this devotion. My mission in this book is that your heart is transformed and thus your relationships are strengthened.
Wonderful. So let's get practical here. Let's talk about some of your favorite stories from the book, some of the testimonials or the snippets or the ways that you've highlighted people who have had the experience of learning about the Sacred Heart and making that a part of their lives, and their lives have changed for the good, perhaps you might say even in a miraculous way. What are some of your favorite stories from this book?
Well, one of my favorite stories was shared with me at a local Sacred Heart meeting we have here in Columbus, Ohio, and he talked about how he was at the prime of his career. Everything was going really well in his eyes, and then he got an autoimmune disease where he was very limited to where he could go and what he did. And as a result, he needed to get an IV for treatment. And while he was getting the treatment, he said, "I was so angry at the Lord. You know, I even put my fist up, like, how can you take away, you know, from me at this high point in my life?" And just then, a Holy Heart of Jesus prayer card fell out of his briefcase as he was going to begin working. And he could read, "Make my heart meek and humble." And he said, "I paused in that very moment and I repented. And I said, Lord, you are making me meek and humble, and you are teaching me this beautiful lesson." And he said, just then, a cancer patient who had lost all her hair said, "What a beautiful day, and God bless." And he said, it was like miraculous, the transformation. So we all have those temptations to be prideful and to think that we're on top of it, which we're not in control of our life. But in return, the Lord is always inviting us to encounter his heart, which in Scripture he tells us his heart is meek and humble.
Beautifully put. We're talking today with Emily Jaminet, author of the new book, Holy Habits from the Sacred Heart, out from Ave Maria Press. And of course, this is ahead of the feast day of the Sacred Heart this coming week. So so we're excited about the book, Emily. And then many of the stories in this book or testimonials are of people who have embraced the Sacred Heart of Jesus. And I think you've done a good job of showing the qualities or the essence of the Sacred Heart of Jesus and seeing how that plays out in people's lives. What's another example of a story where somebody who had not known the Sacred Heart of Jesus, but upon discovering it, it changed their life?
Well, I think what another powerful story was a married couple that had always been practicing their faith. They went to Mass every week, and they were invited to enthrone the Sacred Heart in their home, to have the image, to consecrate their lives, and to place it in a predominant place, just like Jesus requested from St. Margaret Mary 350 years ago. And one of the spouses was very hesitant and said, you know, everything's fine, we don't need to do that. And the wife asked multiple times, you know, that he would, and he finally agreed. And in the testimony, he said, you know, I wish I would have done this sooner. What I encountered was new unity with my spouse, greater intimacy, greater connection, and it strengthened our prayer life. And I just was touched by an ordinary Catholic couple, like me and my husband sitting in the pew, but seeing that God always wants to give us more. It's an invitation to go deeper. We're never going to grasp all that the Lord has for us in his Holy Heart, but we need to begin that journey of letting go of control, letting go of our will, and allowing him to reset our heart and remove the counterfeit that this culture continues to present as what is love. So it was just a touching testimony, one of many that I share in the book.
Wonderful. And the name of the book is Holy Habits from the Sacred Heart. We're talking today with author Emily Jaminet. And for me, the Sacred Heart is kind of a traditional, a classic, a long-standing devotion that we've had in our Catholic Church for so long, since St. Margaret Mary Alacoque received those visions. And perhaps it's seeing a rebound or a rebirth. We see some excitement for the Sacred Heart. What do you find when people who sort of have this view of the Sacred Heart as sort of this vestigial devotion or this older holdover kind of devotion in our Catholic Church that maybe was for a different era, but isn't so much for today's world? What do you find when people really connect with the Sacred Heart of Jesus and learn about him, perhaps through your books? What's the eye-opening aspect of the Sacred Heart devotion that you've seen in talking to people?
Well, such a great question. What I'm seeing is a fruit of spiritual stability. I see that the promises come alive when tepid souls shall become more fervent. So I'm seeing a greater love for the Lord and a greater understanding of how much he wants us to love him and then to respond to that love. I think of a great example and story of a woman up in upstate New York that ended up wanting to place the images in her home. And at first she said, I picked these really small images. I didn't want to look too religious to my neighbors or to my family. She said, but the longer they were in my house, it was an invitation to get, you know, a full-size image and ultimately to place him on a throne in my home, to enthrone him. And she just shared that it was grace that poured forth. And what I love about this devotion particularly is we can look back at previous generations that have found such strength, grace, joy, peace, stability through practicing it. So I hope and pray that as our culture becomes more turbulent, more of a culture of death, that we can all choose to rediscover this powerful devotion that leads us closer to the Eucharist, the sacraments, gives us a better ability to love those around us and to be transformed. So I'm very, very optimistic, you could say, that the Sacred Heart is on the comeback.
Wonderful. Well, we're so excited to hear that. We're talking today with Emily Jaminet, the author of Holy Habits from the Sacred Heart. And as we wrap up the interview today, if you were to sort of talk about a target audience, maybe target is the wrong term, but the group of people who would most benefit from this book, of course, you would like to say it's for everyone, and perhaps it is in some way. But is it for people primarily who already have a devotion to the Sacred Heart or who need to learn more about the Sacred Heart?
Such a great question. I would say it's an entry point to encounter the Sacred Heart and for you to reflect on your own relationship. And just I asked my bishop, Bishop Earl Fernandez, to review the book and to share his thoughts. And he said, it's a book that offers concrete and practical ways of healing broken relationships, especially within the family, and experiencing not only mercy of his heart, but also the joys and delights of his heart. So I couldn't think of a better way to end the interview and share that we all need the joy of Jesus's heart in our hearts and our homes, and all homes need spiritual protection, especially now, as for many of us, we are under such spiritual attack. So I can't say enough about the importance of rediscovering his most perfect Sacred Heart.
Very well put. And the name of the book is Holy Habits from the Sacred Heart. People can go to AveMariaPress.com to find out more about this book. You can go anywhere Catholic books are sold. Support your local Catholic bookstore to pick this one up. And for people who want to find out more about you, Emily, and your great work, what's the best website or other place that they can go?
Sure. They can visit me at EmilyJaminet.com, or they can always learn more about the Sacred Heart at visiting WelcomeHisHeart.com.
Thank you so much. We've been so grateful to you, Emily Jaminet, for joining us on today's show and for writing this brand new book, Holy Habits from the Sacred Heart. We look forward to talking to you again in the future.
Thank you so much.
God bless. That was Emily Jaminet, author of Holy Habits from the Sacred Heart, The Ways to Build Stronger, More Loving Relationships. That one's out from Ave Maria Press. Check that one out. We've got the feast day of the Sacred Heart of Jesus this week coming up. We need to take a short break, but when we come back, we're going to be looking at the question of the week. Does the relic of the finger of St. Thomas that touched the side of Jesus still exist? Stay with us for that answer.
Now, back to the Miracle Hunter on EWTN. Here's Michael O'Neill.
Welcome back. You're listening to the Miracle Hunter radio show on EWTN Radio. This is Michael O'Neill. I'm the Miracle Hunter. Hey, I love getting your questions. People write in from around the world with questions about miracles happening in today's world and those that have happened centuries ago. And I get these questions emailed into me every day from people around the world, but I also enjoy getting the questions that I get when I give a talk. I give about 20 talks around the year. I travel around the country at Catholic shrines, parishes, conferences, talk about miracles, of course, and then I open it up to questions afterwards. I just gave a talk the other night to a nice crowd, and I got about 20 questions at the end of the night. Those were some great ones, so thanks to everybody who gave me some ideas for future questions. But we have a great question for you this week that I had to look up the answer to because I wasn't quite sure where this was. So the email says, good morning, Miracle Hunter. I recall in 1998, I saw an incorrupt finger identified with a sign belonging to the Apostle St. Thomas. The relic was displayed in Venice, Italy at St. Mark's Treasury Room. I'd like to know if it is still there. Thank you, Maria P. Well, thank you, Maria, for your question. And I think that this is one of the most fascinating relics in the history of Christendom, of course, because this, if this is truly the relic of Thomas, the implication is that this is the actual finger that touched the side of Jesus. So it's a relic, it's sort of a double relic in a strange way, you might say. And perhaps it's one of the more interesting relics in existence. And I know that Raymond Arroyo, he wrote about this relic a little bit in his Will Wilder series. So people are fascinated with this potentially powerful relic of St. Thomas. And it turns out that the current location, perhaps it was in St. Mark's Basilica Treasury in 1998, but the current location of the relic of the finger of St. Thomas is part of the collection of relics kept at the Basilica of the Holy Cross in Rome, the Basilica of Santa Croce in Gerusalemme in Rome. That is where you would find this relic of the incorrupt finger of St. Thomas. So if you're in Rome and you like relics and you want to check this one out, I think this is probably a pretty good one to see. Again, it's at the Basilica of the Holy Cross in Rome. And thanks so much, Maria, for your question. If you have a question for the Miracle Hunter, you can send me an email to miraclehunter@ewtn.com or just go to my website, miraclehunter.com, and click on the contact tab, and you can send an email to me that way. And we'll see if we'll be answering your question on the air next week. Let's take a look at the 365 Days with Mary Project. We do this every week where we talk about the Marian devotion of the day. And we all know Fatima May 13th or Lourdes February 11th or Guadalupe December 12th. But believe it or not, for each and every day of the calendar year, there's a different Marian devotion that lines up exactly to the day's date. And so for today, we've got Our Lady of Lapa from Simonsaje in Portugal in the year 1498. And the story goes that, according to legend, a statue of the Virgin in the cleft of a rock was found by a mute girl herding her flock. Much to the displeasure of her mother, she devotedly venerated the image. And thinking the statue to be a silly doll, the mother threw the statue in the fire, and the girl desperately reached into the flames and recovered the unburnt image out of the fire. Strangely, she was cured, but her mother's arm became stricken with paralysis. After some prayer, the mother began to use her arm again. The priest took the image to the parish church, but by some miracle, it returned to its original spot three different times. There on the spot, a chapel was built, later to become a major pilgrimage destination. In 1575, Pope Gregory XIII approved the transfer to the shrine to the Society of Jesus at the request of King Sebastian. And that is Our Lady of Lapa from Simoncelle in Portugal in the year 1498. For more information on this fascinating devotion or any of the hundreds of other Marian devotions from around the world, you can go to the website 365dayswithmary.com. You can go and pick up the book. You can download the app 365 Days with Mary, or you can join the Facebook feed 365 Days with Mary and join any of the 10,000 other followers who get a message related to the Marian devotion of the day. Now let's take a look at They Might Be Saints. People who know me, who know my my show here, know that I love talking about future saints. We're talking about people on the path to sainthood, going from servant of God to venerable to blessed, all those stages before they have all their miracles and they are declared saints by Rome. And so we always like to keep you up to date on who might be saints. And people can go to theymightbesaints.com for more information or check out my television show, which airs on Fridays on EWTN. And so the might be saint news of the week on Saturday, May 20th, which was the last month, the Holy Father received in audience His Eminence Cardinal Marcelo Semeraro, the prefect of the Dicastery for the Causes of Saints. And during this audience, the Pope authorized the same Dicastery to promulgate the decree regarding the heroic virtues of the servant of God, Pedro de la Virgen del Carmen, born Pedro de Gil, a professed priest of the Order of the Regular Poor Clerics of the Mother of God of the Pious Schools. It's quite a long title, born on April 14th, 1913 in Pampeliega in Spain, and he died on December 14th in Saragossa in Spain. And he was a professed priest of the Order of the Poor Regular Clerics of the Mother of God of the Pious Schools. His itinerary of holiness was also characterized by a significant and fruitful path of imitation of Christ through the procession of the evangelical councils, to which, as a faithful son of St. Joseph, he added the fourth specific vow of teaching with passion and did it in a heroic way. And that description is from the Congregation from the Causes of Saints, the Dicastery for the Causes of Saints website, where they have all the future saints listed there. And let's look at the might be saint of the day. For each and every day of the year, there's a different person on the path to sainthood who has a death anniversary or a feast day on that day. For today's date, we've got June 10th. We've got Blessed Bogumilis of Gniezno, who was born in 1135 near Dobrów in Poland. And he was born to the Polish nobility. He was a twin brother of Bogumilis, and he studied in Paris, France. He was a priest serving Holy Trinity Parish in Dobrów in Poland in a church that he built with his own hands. He was the chancellor of Gniezno in Poland, and he had a great dedication to the Blessed Virgin Mary and loved being alone. The Archbishop of Gniezno in 1167, through the years of his episcopacy, he was opposed by his own clergy for his insistence on strict adherence to the discipline and simple lifestyle. He resigned his see in 1172 and became a hermit in Poland for the last decade of his life. He died in the year 1182 near Unowodow in Poland of natural causes. But on his deathbed, he received a vision of the Virgin Mary and the Christ child surrounded by angels and beckoning him to heaven. And his soul is kept in the Basilica of St. Peter and Paul in Poland. He was beatified by Pope Pius XI. In May 1925. That is the Might Be Saint for today, Blessed Bogumiłowicz of Gniezno from Poland. For more information on this fascinating future saint or any of the other future saints that we feature on our show, They Might Be Saints, go to the website, theymightbesaints.com. We need to take a short break, but when we come back, we're going to be talking with the authors of Mary, Mother of God, In Search of the Woman Who Changed History. Stay with us for that.
Now, back to the Miracle Hunter on EWTN. Here's Michael O'Neill.
Welcome back. You're listening to the Miracle Hunter radio show on EWTN Radio. This is Michael O'Neill. I'm the Miracle Hunter. When I'm looking to give a gift to a friend who's interested in miracles, one of the types of things that I default to is I want to give them a nice book, like a coffee table book, a really dramatic book that's got a lot of information, some beautiful photographs on a really interesting topic. And in my opinion, there's one publisher, Catholic publisher out there who sets the gold standard, who's the bar above everybody else when it comes to these beautiful Catholic coffee table books, and that's Rosicon Press. I'm not sure if you've seen these books, the ones that relate to Fatima or Guadalupe or others. They even have one on Eucharistic miracles now in Poland. But there's a brand new one out from Rosicon Press, and they're all consistent. They've got these dramatic black covers. They use the same font, so you know it's the right one. And the photography and the artistry is absolutely amazing. Guadalupe Mysteries, of course, is my favorite because I collaborated with them for the creation of the program Guadalupe Mysteries, which aired on EWTN. So that's always my favorite. But this new book is called Mary, Mother of God, In Search of the Woman Who Changed History. And this is another beautiful book that goes through every aspect of Mary's life, some of the traditions, the legends from her birth all the way to the Assumption and some of the great devotions that have developed over the years. And it's amazing. You'll be blown away by the way different cultures and different places have honored Mary and what we know of her, and everything that you want to know is in this one book. For somebody who loves Mary, this is an incredible book to have. So I highly recommend it. And I'm so excited today because these famous authors of Poland are here today to join us to talk about this new book, Mary, Mother of God, out from Ignatius Press. And we've got Grzegorz Gorny and Janusz Rosicon here with us today. Thank you so much for being with us on today's program.
Hello.
Thank you. Hello.
And so the book is great because it goes through the entirety of Mary's life. What we know of her in the Gospels don't tell us a lot, of course, but we do get some snippets, and we do we have a tradition of knowing where Mary was born, perhaps, where she lived. What do we know about Mary's early life with her parents?
Most of what we know about Mary's parents is from the Protoevangelium of James. It was written probably in the 2nd century Greek language. It is the apocryphal text contains truth and fiction. The title character of the book is associated with St. James the Just, who appears in the Gospels as the Lord's brother. From this source, we know the names of Mary's parents, Joachim and Anne, whose commemoration is on July 26th. And Joachim and St. Anne lived, according to tradition, in beautiful town Sepphoris, on a mountain only 4 miles from Nazareth, we visited the ruins of this town during the Herod the Great and Karolanska's time when Mary's parents lived. That was the capital of Galilee. Herod Antipas decided to rebuild the town destroyed by Roman legions in 4 BC. Some biblical scholars believe that Mary was born there. We don't know. Mary's parents lived Sepphoris and then moved to Jerusalem. When the Holy Family lived in Nazareth, then Joseph probably worked in Sepphoris, and according to the Jewish tradition, also Jesus was with him. Remember, Sepphoris was a city on a hill, as mentioned in the Gospel. When Joachim made the sacrifice in the temple in Jerusalem, the high priest Reuben turned Saint Joachim out of the temple, means he had not begotten a child. So Joachim went out into the desert like Abraham, where he fasted for 40 days and nights, praying for offspring. The oldest source, a 15th century Gregorian Missal, says that Joachim prayed in the Kosiba cave about the Wadi Qelt stream in the Judean desert. Today is the site of the Orthodox St. George Monastery. It's an amazing place for taking pictures. Gregor and I visited also this place, which I show in the book. During that 40 days and nights, St. Anne was praying in the house. When St. Joachim was coming back, St. Anne met him in the Gold Gate of Jerusalem. There are many beautiful pieces of art with those scenes. And 7 months later, Mary was born.
Amazing. Well, thank you, Janusz, for that. And Gregor, we'll turn to you for the next. What do we know about Mary's childhood?
It's impossible to write a biography of Mary on the basis of Bible alone. Why?
Mm-hmm. Right.
Because Mary's name appears only 19 times in the New Testament.
Mm-hmm.
We use other sources, for example, the Gospel of James. This is a very interesting book, who is the most important source of information about Mary's parents and Mary's childhood. Janusz said that the Gospel of James is an apocrypha that was written in the 2nd century after Christ.
Mm-hmm.
Apocrypha is a scripture that is not part of the biblical canon, not a part of Revelation, but the Gospel of James was a source of information for the ancient Christians about the life of Mary. This apocrypha, the basis to our Catholic tradition too. For example, this is the source of our Catholic holiday of Saint Joachim and Saint Anna, and holiday of consecration of Saint Mary in Jerusalem Temple. And from this apocrypha, we know that Mary's parents were Saint Joachim and Saint Anna. And from the Gospel of James, we know that Mary was consecrated in the temple in Jerusalem when she was 3 years old. She helped there. For example, she sewed fabrics for the temple. Why? Because the hands of small children can precisely weave small details. And Mary was 12 years ago, stopped being a girl and became a woman. And the Jewish law said that such a woman was ritual impure, and so Mary had to leave temple. The next period in her life was marriage to Saint Joseph.
Thank you, Gregorz, for that. And then we'll look into the rest of Mary's life, in which there's a lot of tradition, perhaps we might say, surrounding some of the details of Mary as she's raising Jesus. And one of those things is there's a milk grotto that is in the Holy Land, which is where Mary is said to have breastfed Jesus. And it's kind of a miraculous place, according to some people. So, Janusz, what is this milk grotto?
It's a very interesting place for photographers. It's about 600 feet from the Basilica of the Nativity in Bethlehem, a big cave. According to the old tradition, Holy Family spent the night in this place. In the night, the angel told Joseph to immediately to Egypt. So he packed all the family belongings immediately, woke up Mary and Jesus, and he wanted to go straight away. But Mary wanted to breastfeed her son for the last time before leaving, and a few drops of her milk fell on the rock floor. Then, according to the legend, the cavern became bright. Hence, this place is called the Milk Grotto. Grotto is made on tuff, and from Byzantine times, pilgrims scraped off the tuff and took them as relics. It's difficult to determine the original form and size of the Milk Grotto due to the continuous collection of tuff. This practice was described in 1250. Now the grotto is visited by women expecting or asking for offspring, both Christian and Muslim.
Amazing. I have not been to this place yet, but this is an interesting place perhaps to stop on a future miracle tour. The miracles there that are claimed are amazing. And we're talking today about the brand new book that's out from Rosicon Press called Mary, Mother of God, In Search of the Woman Who Changed History. And we're talking today to the two authors from Poland. One of the things that's always fascinated me about the life of Mary is that we think of her always in Nazareth, and then we know of her, of course, living with St. John after the death of Christ. But there was that era or that episode in her life when she had to flee and stay in Egypt. And so my question for Gregorz is, what do we know about that stay of the Holy Family in Egypt? Are there any, is there any reason historically to know these details?
The New Testament says nothing about the stay of the Holy Family in Egypt. But there is a very strong tradition in Egypt that talks about the stay of the Holy Family in this country. According to local tradition, there are more than 20 places in Egypt where Holy Family stayed. There are places with places associated with caves, with water sources, and with huge trees. Normal for people in the desert to look for caves, water sources, and trees. Very interesting that the greatest Christian holiday in Egypt is not Easter, is not Christmas, but the holiday of the arrival of the Holy Family in Egypt. Egyptian Christians, Copts, celebrate this holiday for 2 weeks, and the Copts developed a particular theological tradition. For us, Egypt is a land of slavery, Egyptian slavery. But for the Copts, Egypt, a land of salvation, because Jesus was saved when he fled to Egypt, and this tradition is alive in Egypt today. The living five of the Christians in Egypt made the greatest impression on me. For me, this is the greatest testimony of faith, because for many centuries, the Christians of Egypt have been a small island in the Sea of Islam, and they have kept their faith to this day. This is amazing. And we were in Egypt in the shrines of the martyrs who were murdered a few years ago, and they were killed for faithfulness to Christ.
Yeah, no, that's an incredible thing, like you say, to have kept their faith all this time, just being a small enclave of Christians in a Muslim area. Truly incredible. And what's interesting, too, I think, of the Holy Family route in Egypt, there's a place called Zaytun in 1968 to 1971, where there was a Marian apparition that was claimed there and seen there by many people. It's one of the more remarkable cases of a Marian apparition that was approved by the Coptic Church, and the Catholic Church has shown recognition of it as well. Check out my website for more information on Our Lady of Zaytun, but it's supposed to be on one of the locations where the Holy Family stayed as well. And Gregorz, I'll keep talking to you on this one. This is a question. I did a program for EWTN called Explore with the Miracle Hunter, and we did an episode in Loreto. I travel all over the world for that program, and we traveled all over Italy, including the place of Loreto. And it's quite a fascinating place. I think, you know, it's like a basilica on the outside, and then you go and there's a almost a little chapel on the inside, and on the inside is the house of Mary. And, you know, it's believed that this is the place where Mary was incarnate with the Word, where Jesus was conceived through the Holy Spirit. And so there's a lot of legend that says that this house flew through the air and landed there in Loreto in Italy. And there's a lot of question, or is this just legend? Is it possible that this Loreto house is really the house of Mary?
It is a very interesting question. We know that the place of the Annunciation is in the Grotto of the Annunciation in Nazareth. Grotto was part of the house of the Holy Family. Today, over this grotto is the Basilica of the Annunciation. Tradition says that Archangel Gabriel came to Mary in this grotto. But the house of Mary and Joseph consists of two parts. The first part is a cave in the rock. The second part is the building added to this rock. This house had only three walls. Because the fourth wall was the rock with the entrance to the cave. This first part is in Nazareth today. The Basilica of the Annunciation is built on this place. And the other part was taken from Nazareth to Italy by the Crusaders when the Holy Land was conquered by the Muslims. It was in the early 13th century. And this three-walled house has been moved to Loreto in Italy. Today, there is a huge Marian shrine there. In the 20th century, scientists researched this house of Mary and found that it was from Nazareth. Why? Mm-hmm. Because the building material were from Holy Land. The way of building was from the Holy Land. Everything from the Holy Land, not from Italy. And scientists proved that House of Mary in Loreto, the genuine house from Nazareth.
Yeah, it is amazing. I think that the fact that there is scientific data that supports this is really incredible. And turning back to Janusz, we have, with Mary's assumption, there are no relics of her, many of the apostles and other saints. There's some people might say that's proof of her assumption, the fact that this greatest of all saints, we don't have her first-class relics. But then there's the question of, are there any relics associated with Mary anywhere in the world, second-class relics, perhaps? And for people who don't know the distinction, the first class are the parts of your body, and then the others are things that you may have worn or interacted with. And so the answer is, I quite know there are relics that are claimed of Mary. And so, Janusz, what are these relics that are associated with Mary?
There are several types of Mary's relics. Most common are different kinds of fabrics, but there are also hair and ring. Personally, for me, the most important relics is holy tunic of Argenteuil. We visited this place a few times with Grzegorz. Considered by some researchers, this tunic to be the authentic seamless garment that Christ wore on his way to Golgotha. There is a possibility, bordering on centrally, the garment was woven for Jesus by Mary herself. The tunic was studied by French scientists. We met them. It is certain that this tunic was worn by the men of the Turin Shroud. Why did Mary weave clothes herself? Because the ability to weave was one of the basic skills of women at the time. Biblical idol of a spouse, best reflected in the poem In Praise of a Good Wife from the Book of Proverbs. Another beautiful fabric is in Chartres, France. Emperor Charlemagne probably received Mary's dress at the end of the 8th century as a gift from Constantinople. His grandson, Charles de Bold, in 876, decided to donate the dress to the French town of Chartres after the town was destroyed by Normans. The Cathedral Notre Dame de Chartres was built as a great precious reliquary for the veil of Our Lady. Local clergy related that the Mother of God was wearing this dress when she gave birth to Jesus. Hmm. And the pregnant women came to the cathedral even from afar. Now, these relics is possible to see in the cathedral every day. Other places like Zugdid in Georgia, where is the dress of Our Lady, Tortosa in Spain, where is the belt, or Perugia in Italy, where is the wedding ring of Mary, the relics are presented once or few times in a year. And sometimes, like in Aachen, Germany, one every 7 years. So if you are planning to visit some towns and see the relics, please check when will be possible. But the ceremonies of presenting the relics are very beautiful and photographically interesting. The procession through the streets of Zugdid in Georgia from the museum where the dress is hidden for the year to the new church is very colorful, similar in Tortosa, Spain, or Prato, Italy. Pilgrims from many cities and countries come to all these places, or also for praying and want to see this beautiful piece of art. Don't know exactly what is a real work of Mary or not, because fabrics were not examined, but scientists the tunic from Argente was examined, but Mary's relics were not examined by scientists.
Well, that's a great thing to know. I think that with a lot of these relics, there's a lot of legends that come about them. Their origins perhaps are in question, and it's always fascinating when science can take a look at them to verify or at least give some idea about their origin. So this is all fascinating. And when we look at the book, Mary, Mother of God, In Search of the Woman Who Changed History, just in this interview, you can see we bounced around between numerous topics of different aspects of Mary's life and the devotion to Mary, some of the legends, the stories, the miracles that have surrounded her and the devotion to Mary. And we're going to leave you with a cliffhanger here today, which is the question I wanted to ask was, have you discovered anything that was previously unknown when in doing this book? And the answer is yes, they have. And so I encourage you to pick up this book, Mary, Mother of God, In Search of the Woman Who Changed History, to find out what that is. So this is a new book, is Mary, Mother of God, from Ignatius Press and Rosicon Press. You can pick this one up. And we're so grateful to Gregor Zgorny and Janusz Rosicon for joining us for this fascinating interview today about the life of Mary. Thanks so much, gentlemen, for joining us on today's program.
Thank you very much. Thank you very much.
God bless. That was Janusz Rosicon and Gregor Zgorny joining us from Poland. Amazing to talk to these authors who have done these incredible coffee table books like Mary, Mother of God. Like I say, I have their entire set of books, and there are some of my favorite gifts to give out to friends and others when I want to give a gift about a certain topic related to Mary or otherwise. So I encourage you to check this one out. Go to ignatiuspress.com or rosiconpress.com for more information on how to pick up this beautiful new book, Mary, Mother of God. And that's all the time we have for today's show. If you missed any of this episode or want to catch up on past episodes, you can go to ewtn.com/radio, check out the audio archives, or download the free EWTN app. I'd like to thank our guests, Emily Jaminet, author of Holy Habits from the Sacred Heart, and Gregor Zgorny and Janusz Rosicon, authors of Mary, Mother of God. Check out my EWTN television series, Explore with the Miracle Hunter, which airs every Saturday at 6 p.m. Eastern Time. Tonight, we have an episode on the Sacred Heart devotion, Explore Pere Lemoniel. I'll be visiting Pere Lemoniel in France, where St. Margaret Mary Olacoque, she first experienced dramatic visions of Jesus' Sacred Heart, and I'll be exploring the origins of this cherished devotion. And check out my new book, Science and the Miraculous, How the Catholic Church Investigates the Supernatural. It's out from Tan Books and available at ewtnrc.com. And I'd like to thank you for joining me today on Miracle Hunter, where from claims of healings and visions to the world's most inexplicable events, whether you're a believer or a skeptic, The truth is always worth the hunt. Talk to you next week.